Well, it is the top of the hour, and we should get started, Bob. We have quite a few people who have joined us, and we're going to be opening up the phone lines for questions for Bob and in a few minutes. But I just want to take a few minutes now to introduce you to Bob Zachmeier, originally from Mandan, North Dakota. He bought his first rental property in 1982 at the age of 22, and he was in the defense electronics industry for 22 years. And he and his wife, Camille, opened a real estate brokerage in 2004. And in the past 12 years, they have closed 3,400 real estate transactions. And he discovered notes and realized, as he says, that mailbox money was far superior to the tenant and toilet hassles of rental property. I do want to ask you that, Bob, but as an aside, now that I have the chance, I'd like to let people know that you put on a seminar at which you donate all of the proceeds to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, which I think is just absolutely terrific. You are to be certainly...
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet. You bet. Well, tell us about discovering notes and realizing that you like them at least as much as you like rental property, if not more.
Well, the first investment I ever had involving a note was a mobile home park, a little 12-unit mobile home park that we purchased back in 2002. And it had all these 1950s little Flintstones kind of mobile homes with the green shag carpet and the blue appliances and 8 feet wide and 33 feet long. And they were just, the oldest, that piece of property was the worst eyesore in the neighborhood. So we purchased it and got a bunch of 1980s park model mobile homes to move in. And we were buying those. A lot of the parks in Tucson were after your home is 20 years old, they no longer let you park it in their park because they've all gotten into the mobile home sales business and they're trying to drive, new sales. So they kick out the people that have been there. Well, if someone came and retired and when they were 65 and 20 years later, they're either 85 or dead. And now some kid in Wisconsin owns this place and doesn't know anything about it. And we were picking these things up. I think the most we paid for one was $8,000, but most of them were between $5,000 and $6,000. And they had all the furniture. They had all the towels and sheets and mattresses and box springs and dishes, and it's like they went to the store for groceries and never came home. So anyway, we brought in all these new homes, and we made that park brand new. We sold it five times for over $500,000, as high as $550,000. We had purchased it for $207,000, and we could never get financing. Everybody that ever had an offer fell out because of financing. So finally, we went, there were two other couples that owned it with my wife and I, and we went and took out loans against our 401ks, and we paid off our loan, and then we offered it with financing. And I sold it within a couple of weeks. A surgeon came in and put down $165,000 cash, and we carried the paper. And we had a $330,000 note, and so we had... and his offer was very strong, and at $495,000, we said, let's take it and run. So we collected that note, $330,000, and we started collecting payments at 8% interest. And I started getting a postcard in the mail every week of people wanting to buy that note. And this one gentleman from Kansas was extremely persistent and just kept on me and kept on me. And each time I spoke with them, they came a little closer to our price. And we ended up selling this. The note, we discounted it to $300,000 from $335,000. And I just thought, instead of an 8-year balloon that we had on it, we didn't even own that note for 6 months. And what I learned there was, anytime you have a property that you can't sell, put the paper on it, because it's a lot easier to sell the paper than it is the property.
And have you been doing that since, creating your own notes and selling them, or have you been...
Well, we kind of invested in a few along the way, but where it really hit, we really hit our stride, was in 2012. In Tucson, the prices fell by 50% during the recession. So most of our real estate clients who we worked with for many years were unable to sell their home because they owed far more than it was worth. And the only game in town was selling REO properties for the banks. And I got very, very good at going to conferences. I went to over 70 conferences in 3 years. And I was on a plane every 2 weeks going somewhere. But I never went to a single conference without bringing home another bank to work for. And we ended up working for every major financial institution and a whole bunch of outsourced companies. And at one point in 2012, I had over 300 REO properties listed personally in my brokerage. And then that dried up just when the market turned around. The inventory just dried up within 6 months. And literally, we went from 300 to 30 in 6 months' time. And so what was left behind was all these people that had been foreclosed on, and they're back on their feet, and the market was starting to recover, and the prices had gotten so low, too low, that investors from everywhere were coming in and buying up property. And the local people couldn't qualify because they tightened up the bank rules so much. And even as late as June of 2014, if you go to LEMay.com, I actually am on their mailing list for the Origination Insight Report. You can sign up. It's free. And every month it will mail a copy of all the mortgage loans that were applied for in America, how long did it take to close them, what type of loans were they? Were they refis or a new loan, or was it a VA, a FHA, a conventional? And it just tells you all the data on the mortgage industry. Well, as recently as last month, 30% of all the people that applied for a loan didn't get one. 70% were approved. So to me, that is a gold mine. That means that one out of three people out there are looking for financing. I'm not a believer that everyone deserves a home, and I don't think that everybody should have a home. But I'll tell you, the people that got bypassed or by those are the ones that are getting hit the hardest are the hardest working people in the country, the self-employed business owners. They don't fit the bank's box for having a consistent W-2 every 2 weeks. And just an example, Bill, we've got a property right now that a buyer right now that is trying to buy a $285,000 home, and he owns a nail salon up in Phoenix, and he wants to put $170,000 cash down on a 285 home, and he can't get a 135 bank loan.
Wow.
I mean, those are the kind of deals where you hope they don't pay you back.
Exactly. Well, what do you as a note investor do about that? What opportunities do you see in situations like that?
Well, first of all, the people that can't qualify are predisposed to pay a higher price for a home. They just expect, just as people pay a higher price for a home on a golf course or a home that has granite countertops, a home with financing is actually, if you put financing on your home, it's the best amenity you could have. Just because of the sheer numbers, 3 out of 10 people can't get a bank loan, and these people are predisposed to pay a higher price. And there's so many benefits to a seller of doing owner financing. There's a lot of millennial buyers out there right now that and also people recovering from the recession that just don't have the money for a down payment. And they're asking the seller, if they have a down payment assistance program, and then they ask the seller to pay 3% in closing costs. So by the time you factor in a real estate commission, the seller's closing costs, and then 3% for the buyer's closing costs, I mean, you're looking at 10% of your home's value just in selling costs, and that's before the home inspector comes and starts, finding all kinds of repairs for you to pay for as well. So with our properties, the first thing that I do is I ask a seller, when I meet with them, what they're going to do with the money when they sell their home. Are they going to buy another home? Are they going to put it in the stock market? Are they going to put it in the bank? And then I just ask a couple of sort of leading questions. But I just say, now let me ask you, do you want a fast sale or a slow sale? And do you want all the buyers or just the MLS buyers? Because the people that can't qualify aren't looking on the MLS. And then this last question is going to seem kind of weird, but do you want less money or more money for your home? And of course, all the answers lead them to the seller finance aspect of it. And so what we do is I educate people. I'm not a lender, but I educate people that this even exists, this possibility of becoming a lender. And then I ask people, if you're going to invest in the stock market, name a stock that you could invest in, or any investment for that matter, that you could put your money in, that you would know and understand as well as you understand this house that you've lived in for the last 12 years. And then you would lend typically no more than 70% of the home's market value, a 30-day market value, not a pie-in-the-sky value, 30-day market value, take that times 70%, that would be the most that you would lend on this property. So what other investments do you have that could lose 30% of their value and you would still be whole, and not only be whole, but still earning interest on your money? I haven't found anybody that could give me another example of an investment like that.
As an investor, then, are you in a position, if they decide that they want to do that, and those are very persuasive questions and certainly would certainly educate someone in the advantages of seller financing, would you be in a position to buy that note at that point, or do you ever go back to them 6 months later and say, would you like to sell that note?
I actually tell them if they ever want to sell it, I have a line of people that would like to buy it from them. But honestly, most people, they like the idea of selling their home fast. They like the idea of selling it for more money. But they don't like the idea of being the bank. They're scared. And it's like, no, we need our money. We just need our money out. So I just replace them with someone else. I said, well, what if I found somebody that would finance it for you? Would that be okay? Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Okay, now, just so you understand, these people who are buying your home are buying it because it carries financing. And the not necessarily paying extra for the financing, but usually in order to sell the financing to someone else, we have to discount the note somewhat. But that's okay because they're paying you a premium for the property. So you could still walk away with the market value and not have to do the note carrying. And also, let me tell you, even if you don't carry the loan, let me tell you how you're going to benefit. Number one, we don't have an appraiser coming in here slapping your hand, telling a buyer how much they can pay for your home. So that risk goes out the window of the home appraising for what the buyer is paying. The second thing is our buyers pay their own closing costs. So right off the top, you're going to save 3% from what most of the buyers in the market are going to ask you for. And then most of our people are in the trades, and I actually market to people in the trades, like own an electrical repair company or a painting company or a sheetrocking company or a plumbing company, and they can fix this home way cheaper than you could. So it's very rare for any of them to ask for repairs. So between the 3% you save in closing costs and the 1 or 2% in repairs, plus the taking away the appraisal risk, you're far better off to sell it with financing, even though you would sell that note. You are doing the seller financing, but you would sell your note at the closing table.
Bob, you're going to be talking about, I know the title of your presentation at the Paper Source Note Symposium at the end of April is Creating Crazy High Yields. And could you give us a little preview of how that could be done?
Sure. So let's just say, I use this example all the time, and for a lot of people this type of property doesn't exist, but I do it for a reason. I use a $100,000 home just because when I say 70%, 70% equals $70,000. So it's very easy math. It's a fairly complex topic for new people to understand. So when I'm explaining to a homeowner, that's the example I use. So, for instance, if someone came in and put a $70,000 first position loan on a home, they or the seller wanted to do it themselves, those loans typically the rate that is put on them is usually right at 7%. We actually do it at 6.99 just for marketing purposes. So when a buyer asks, what's the percentage rate? 6.99. Well, investors turn up their nose at 6.99, but a retiree who's getting 0.2 at the bank and it takes them 5 years to make 1% at the bank, they are all over 6.99 or 7%. That's 35 times more than the bank is paying them. So because the reason we break it into two notes is so that if this buyer is paying a premium and their down payment is the equivalent of the premium, then you would have a $100,000 loan on a $100,000 home. But by breaking it into two pieces, you have a $70,000 first position loan on a $100,000 home and then a $30,000 second position loan. So I can just tell you from my experience, that home, I would have a bidding war if I priced it at $115,000. There's that many people that just cannot get a loan, but have adequate down payment, pass the and we run everybody through a licensed loan originator, and they have the 43% ability to pay. They have the, you know, a very significant amount of skin in the game. And in this example, if they paid a $15,000 premium, they would put at least $15,000 down. Oftentimes it's higher than that. And if you look back over the last 10 years of all the homes that got foreclosed on, first of all, of the 10 million plus that got foreclosed on, close to half of those were investors who had multiple properties. If you go back and look at how many of the people that lost their home had 15% down, you're going to find that less than one half of 1% of all the foreclosures were in that down payment category. So the risk on these type of investments is very, very low. There is risk in any investment. But the second, if they're paying $15,000 down and we have a retired person who is financing the property and bringing in a $70,000 first position loan, that's $85,000 that is already in the equation. So basically, the seller would leave $15,000 of their equity in the property, but they would own a $30,000 note. And typically on the seconds, they go at 8% here. That's what the market will bear. And of course, we write that up at a 7.99 rate. But when you calculate it on the yield that you're receiving, you're being paid basically 8% interest on a $30,000 note, which creates a 17.5% yield because you only paid $15,000 for that note. Now, if the seller doesn't want to carry it, then that's where we have an investor that steps in and carries it for that person. So the seller walks away with their full $100,000 value from their home, and they're saving the money, as I said earlier, on the closing costs and the repairs and not having to worry about the appraisal. So that 17.5, that's a pretty decent return, but it's not what I would deem to be crazy high, right?
Okay.
So what if we take that same example and I go to that seller and I show them, when you get an offer on your home, you're going to, and let's just say you got a full price $100,000 offer, you would pay real estate commission, and depending upon what's common in your area, that could be anywhere from 5 to 7%. The closing costs that you are going to experience is mostly your title policy, that's 1%. If you pay your buyer's closing costs, that's 3%. So you're somewhere around 10% of your cost. So your $100,000 full price offer doesn't give you $100,000, it gives you $90,000. And then the home inspector comes, and who knows how much they're going to ask you for in repairs. So When I fund properties, I have a home inspection done, but I'm not going to nickel and dime on a bunch of stuff. If it has a bad roof, I'm going to ask you to replace it. If it has a bad air conditioner, I'm going to ask for a replacement, but I'm not going to hit you for a bunch of little tiny repairs. But the biggest challenge that you have in this market is when you sell your home, you're going to have to find a different place to live. And when you look at how long it takes you to get your loan and how fast this buyer wants to move into your home, you have a week or maybe two to find another home and put it under contract. In a low supply market, it's a very good chance you could end up homeless. And what's the chance that you're going to get your dream home in 2 weeks? So the opportunity exists for a different way to sell your home. So what if you purchased, what if I brought somebody in here, or me, that just sat down and wrote you an offer tonight for $90,000? Now, if you call any of the home investors or anybody that buys houses, I mean, the formula pretty much anybody's going to use nationally is a 70% of market value. And that sounds very greedy on their part. However, just to buy a house and resell it, you can expect to spend 10% of its value. To spend money on repairs, if you spent 10% on repairs, that would leave you 10% in a profit. But if it took you 5 or 6 months to sell that home, the carrying cost on an empty home can be 1 or 2%. So there's a good chance that even though they bought your home at 70 cents on the dollar, they could lose money on it if they carry it too long. But by going this route, by just saying, you know what, here's a $90,000 offer, that's actually higher than you would net on a full-price MLS offer when you factor in the commission, the closing costs for the buyer, your costs, repairs, everything else. But now the difference with this offer is all you have to decide is when you want to cash the check. Now we're working on your timeline instead of on the buyer's timeline. Now you can actually plan your move across the country or wherever you're going. You can wait until you find the home you really want, not just one that fits the criteria because that's all that's out there. And you make the call and we can close in a week. So you want to close next week? I can do that. And actually, I've done several, probably five in the last year, where we wrote an offer on Tuesday and closed on Friday with title insurance. So just the finality of being done and taking that stress out of moving and doing it on their timeline when it's convenient for them, most people are going to pick that approach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those are some excellent points, Bob. And I'll tell you what, I know there are probably people that want to ask some questions. Maybe they have a situation themselves that they're facing, a real estate situation, trying to sell a house, trying to buy a house, trying to buy a note, some questions that you have raised about that, some good advice you've given. So if anyone does have a question, just press *6 on your phone, and we will put you on. Bob, I wanted to mention, too, I know that you have often conduct webinars for investors, retirees, real estate agents about private financing. What kind of information do you have about that, and how can people get involved in that?
Sure. I have most Tuesdays, if I'm not on travel somewhere, I do a webinar. I promise people 48 webinars a year. And I'm about to take a two-week break to go to Europe, but I'll be back in time to be out at Paper Source. And then after that, I'll be around. But so I am taking a little bit of a break. But pretty much every Tuesday at 9 o'clock, and Arizona is one of those states that never turns their clocks back. So it's 9 o'clock for me all the time. But I do an hour-long webinar. And on the webinar, we always have a training session that we're just talking about a different topic, due diligence, Craigslist advertising, just all kinds of different things. But then the second half of the call is always structuring deals. And these are deals that someone in my group has gotten in the last 7 days since the last webinar. So it's not some theory and it's not some historical thing that happened 20 years ago. This has happened since the last telephone call a week ago. And we basically structure the deals. So I coach about 100 people in 28 states. And, I mean, I've helped people all over the country get a new home that no one else would let them have, and people I've never met, just by helping to structure their deal. And I was just on the phone this morning with a gentleman in Austin, Texas, a lady in Dallas, and another guy out in California. So that's today. But it's just there's so many different things that come into play, that the problems that can stop a sale, and there's often very simple solutions. And that's, I'm sure I was a very difficult child to raise because I was that kid that asked and questioned everything. But you know, my mind just constantly thinks of other ways to do something, and that's been very, very successful in this industry.
Well, how can people get involved in these webinars and contact you?
Sure. If you want to send an email, I believe that people should be able to sample the product before they're billed for something, and it isn't free. But I will offer people on this call the next couple webinars for free. And all you have to do is send an email to Bob, B-O-B, at notecarry.com.
And notecarry.com is your website. And tell us, before we get to our callers, and we have several, tell us just a bit about what is NoteCarry.
Sure. NoteCarry is a site that basically has multiple different ways to structure notes. The goal when I built it, first of all, was not to sell it. I built it for myself. I built the entire thing in Excel. I was an engineer at Raytheon for 22 years in Texas Instruments, and I'm very savvy with numbers and Excel sheets and PowerPoint slides. But so I was finding myself with a calculator and a legal pad, finding ways to help structure deals. So I made this Excel sheet that one tab had the data entry and one tab had the buyer report and another one had the seller report and another one had the investor report, because you wouldn't want to show the buyer how much the seller is making. You wouldn't necessarily want to show the buyer how much the investor is making, and you don't necessarily want to have the investor know how much the seller is making. So it just by having each one of these tabs, I could just have a report immediately by putting in 10 pieces of information. Literally in under a minute, I could structure a deal on any house. So what happened was a bunch of agents in my company started, hey, we need to get that. How do we do that? And I'd spent literally thousands of hours, seriously thousands of hours, creating this and making it and fine-tuning it. And I knew that if I gave one person a copy of my Excel file, when they left the company, all my intellectual property goes out the door with them. So I created a website just for the simple fact that if they left my company, I'd take away their password, and they never had access to the code. So that's how it came up, and I actually showed for the first time in public NoteCarry back in 2013 at my annual Make-A-Wish conference. And everybody said, hey, I want that, how much is it? And it's like, it's not for sale, it's mine. So finally they talked me into selling it to them, and I started. Back then all it was one module. Now it's got tons of tools and six modules on it, and it does all kinds of things. But that's kind of how it's grown. And then I started the coaching, again, not as a business opportunity or something. It's because I was seeing that a lot of people were signing up for my software, and a year later, after their subscription died, they were quitting. And I'd call them and say, why did you quit? I'm running my entire business on this. And, I mean, I'm the only guy. I do more seller finance than the 6,000 other agents in Tucson, Arizona combined. And half the deals, actually most of the deals that we do, never even hit the MLS. It's not that we're withholding any leads or listings from other people. It's just that we have buyers backed up, and we the best deals always get sold to the people that the agent knows or the investor knows. So that's I started having webinars to show people how to use the software, and the idea was I'm going to have five or six webinars and just get you really good at doing this, and I recorded them all, and therefore if you ever need to know how to use it, they're on the NoteCarry site. And there you go. And then so I tried to retire from the webinars, and everybody said, no, we love this, and we got to keep going with this. And then I said, well, you know what? My wife, every time I hang up the phone from helping one of you guys structure your deal, my wife says, well, that was really nice of you to help them, but when are you going to help me run our business? So I kind of got in a little trouble there. So anyway, that's how my webinar business came around, and because it is taking more and more of my time, there's a price affixed to it. So there you go.
Well, I think everybody understands that. You've got to buy groceries, and Bob, for those of you who hadn't heard, Bob has an annual seminar, and it's a very instructive seminar. You should check it out. And Bob gives all of the proceeds to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So go to notecarry.com and see what Bob has to offer. We've opened up the phone lines now, and we have our first caller.
Good evening, Bob and the moderator. I just have a question for you, and I wanted to know what are the a little bit about myself is that I used to do I used to find notes for investors a couple years ago and slowed down in the business, but now I would like to renew my interest in both finding notes for investors, and that's one question: do you buy notes? And also, I want to get more involved into seller financing in my market. So my question to you is, I know that Tucson, Arizona is a big seller finance state within the industry that you're in. How does that, starting off in seller financing, would you advise for somebody who's starting off to follow the same techniques that work in Arizona that would maybe apply to, say, Chicago or other different markets?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's especially the California people are the hardest people. Well, that won't work in my market. We don't have $100,000 homes.
Exactly, because Chicago does have a lot of because it's the heart of the city, the homes are way more expensive than, say, Detroit or other rural areas like Jackson, Florida, thereabout. It's a city. So I was just trying to say that how does one structure the seller financing to fit
to put this at rest, I have a coaching student that lives in San Francisco, and we structured a deal on a condo in San Francisco, the most expensive market in the United States. It was a $1.3 million seller finance deal. And the lady that could not get financing actually has a startup .com type company, and she put $300,000 down.
Oh, wow.
And again, that's the kind of note that people like to carry. And you know, it's very, very easy.
I am going
when
to California, actually, in a month from now. I'm moving to California, actually. And
But there's definitely opportunity. And you know, just because the coastal areas are very expensive, I have another coaching student in Tracy, California. And Ron recently put a note on a house that he got for $160,000 in California. So, you know, when you say California, everybody thinks, oh, that's real high-priced real estate. Well, if you get away from the coastal areas, and Tracy isn't that far from the coast. It's just south of Sacramento. There's plenty of opportunity. It's near Stockton. And Stockton, as you know, was the first city in the recession to file bankruptcy.
Oh, wow. Sacramento is the heart of California right there. So you're saying that it works even in high-priced areas, one has to just find the marketing.
It works everywhere, but I'll tell you, my target would be lower-priced properties. I don't like going into places with a lot of gang activity, so I stay away from the war zones. But the lowest price opportunity you can find, the better. And there's far better markets than Tucson. I mean, I own 10 notes in Jackson, Mississippi. And those properties are selling for $20,000 or less.
Exactly.
I own a couple of notes in Charlotte, North Carolina. And those are just crazy. The rents are $600 or $700, and I have a first position note on a home for $30,000 that was discounted to $24,000. So do I buy notes? I have an answer for you. It's a qualified answer. I buy notes from friends.
Oh,
you won't find me at the hall, out in the hall, buying notes from strangers at Paper Source.
I hope I introduce myself properly then. My name is Chris.
But there are so many good people in this industry, but there's also a lot of people. And then, you know, I'll just ask you a simple question. If you had 10 notes to sell, which 10 would, or, and you were going to sell half of them. So you had 10 notes, you're going to sell half of them. Which five would you sell, the five best ones or the five worst ones?
If I could get rid of the worst ones,
sure. you answered your own question. But so that's what, this is why I like to create notes, and I like to create them in my backyard because I understand my backyard. Nobody tracks this market like I do. I know little nuances that change. I know this neighborhood's better than that one. I know that this zip code is selling 65% of the inventory, and that zip code selling 13% of the inventory. So you should have that type of understanding of the market that you're buying in, because you just say, oh, yeah, I bought a note in Detroit. Well, what part of Detroit? What part of Tucson? You know, it's just, you really need someone with boots on the ground. And when you buy from individuals that you know and that are friends, and this is what my group is, it's a trusted group of friends. If you cheat one person in a small group, everybody in that group will know, and nobody will do business with you again. Does that make sense?
Before you go, you spoke about some students that you have, and is there any way that how do you bring people on as students just so that they could do a few self-financing deals in their neighborhood? Are you taking on students right now?
Yes, but just to be clear, I don't coach people one-on-one. I do weekly telephone webinars and with video. I record them all. I provide all the slides on my website. So there's over 100 recorded webinars on different ways to structure everything from, I have a whole webinar on bandit signs and how to get leads from bandit signs and on Craigslist advertising. And it's, you're going to find this hard to believe, but I'm a real estate broker with a license, and I sell more homes on Craigslist than I do on the MLS.
I know. Craigslist is my friend. I've got a few deals, mobile homes especially, a couple of years back on Craigslist, so I'm very familiar with
it. But on this call coming up on Tuesday, which, by the way, if you email me, several people have already, bob@nocarry.com, I already know what I'm going to be talking about. I wrote an ad the other night at 10:30 and posted it on Craigslist, and at 11:30 I had my first person. That property was being shown to that investor at 1:30 in the afternoon the next day from an ad that started at 10:30 at night.
That's wonderful. That's the kind of business I want to be in.
Exactly. And what was the cost?
Yeah, Craigslist.
But yeah, if you just send an email, I'll give you information offline about my program and just what it involves. But actually, I wouldn't even offer to have you sign up and take your money until you've witnessed a couple of them to make sure it's what you think it is.
All right. I appreciate your time. Thanks again, sure. Thank you, Bob,
for
and
sure.
The moderator. And I'll just sit back and listen in.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate you. Thank you.
I appreciate
it. Got a call coming up from Florida. And before we get to that, I do want to mention that Bob will be teaching a lot more. You've already seen how innovative and what brilliant ideas he has and tips and techniques. He's going to be teaching at the Paper Source Notes Symposium at the end of April. And our discount, we have a discount running, and that has to expire on April 5th. We just have to do that because we have luncheons, we have open bar receptions, and we have to give the hotel a head count for that, so we have to raise the price as of the end of the day on April 5th. Go to papersourceseminars.com to get all the information about that. And if you want to talk to Bob Zachmeyer, we have a few minutes left. Just hit *6 on your phone. We have a caller from Florida. Welcome.
Thank you. Hey, Bob. My name
Hi.
Is Zach.
Hey, Zach.
Fascinated with the example you used here and just sort of want to follow it up. A homeowner has a $100,000 house, and you convince them that you can take a $90,000 offer. Do you in this case, as the investor or realtor, do you actually close on that, or do you structure a resale at the closing with that seller? I guess just take it the next step. What would you market
sure.
that house at? What kind of premium? And you bring in a retiree in, and then you have a second when the seller is expecting $90,000. And then also you might touch on, you mentioned it before, but origination. Do you bring an RMLO on every one of your deals, or
yes.
could you structure it where the seller could be the originator? On
the seller is the originator on all my deals.
Okay.
And yes, every single one I've ever done has a licensed loan originator has previewed the file. The lady I use locally is actually doing the qualification for people all over the country, because you're qualifying people to meet the Dodd-Frank Act, which is a national law. It's not a state law. So as long
right.
as you have a state license, you can qualify people to meet the national law.
Mm-hmm.
And they
mm-hmm.
did some checking with the CFPB, and there was a different license, a multi-state license that they got. But and this actually started when a friend of mine was here from my conference, and he said, you know, I can't find a person in my state that does loans like your loan lady does for $500. And,
right,
and,
I can't either.
Well, I guarantee you, I know somebody in Florida that'll do that for you. And I, you know, where I met him? I met him last year at Paper Source. I'm not
wow.
kidding. but the so yes, we qualify the buyer, we qualify the person, we make sure they have the ability to pay. We get a printout of their credit. We get a report that's actually like a Calyx type software product. It's called Loan Score. And
mm-hmm.
it actually is Dodd-Frank compliance software. And it literally says pass, 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 pass. You know, it's like a 30-page report that just tells you everything about that borrower. And when people do lend money to these borrowers, and it is an owner-occupant homeowner, I mean, the Dodd-Frank Act scared the heck out of a lot of investors, because the teeth
right.
of the Dodd-Frank Act is the ability to pay clause. And
mm-hmm.
if you give a loan to somebody who later comes and says they didn't have the ability to pay, they can make you give back the down payment and every payment that they made to that loan in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So by running it through a licensed loan originator, now if they come back and say they didn't have the ability to pay, you pull out the mortgage application and say, where did you lie?
Mm-hmm.
That's called loan fraud.
Mm-hmm.
That's a felony. So
yeah.
That pretty much, I mean, I've never had one go bad, and I'll tell you the reason. The reason that is one, skin in the game, and two, my goal is to have, as I said, stay on the lower price points of the market, and rent would be more expensive than the payment. My typical investor, when you are not investor but homeowner who buys a home, is
mm-hmm.
saving between what they're getting back in income tax refund for their mortgage interest and their principal, and between what they're saving in rent. Most of them have $200 left over in their checkbook that they wouldn't have if they didn't buy that house. So
mm-hmm.
now when money gets tight and they look out the window, to move across the street and rent that house across the street would cost them more money than to pay for this one that they've already bought and put a significant amount of money into.
Mm-hmm.
That will reduce your failures significantly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If not wipe them out totally. But
yeah.
But I want to touch on one thing, premium. Premium is what the market will bear. And premium
mm-hmm.
is not by any stretch of the imagination a percentage. So because
mm-hmm.
I used a $100,000 example and I said we could possibly, you know, sell that home, or actually I'd have a bidding war on that home for $115,000, that doesn't mean that you can add 15% onto a $600,000 loan. It's just
right.
not going to work. That'd be $90,000. So the amount people are willing to pay is something you have to test in your market, but it has to make sense for the buyer. And that's why
mm-hmm.
anytime I demonstrate my software, whenever we plug in numbers, I always look at the buyer report first before I ever show the seller how much money they're going to get in their pocket. We look at the buyer report first to make sure that it makes sense for the buyer. Because if you don't have a buyer, you don't have a sale.
Right.
So you can structure that note But back to the $90,000 question, if I give that person a deadline in the sand and they give me their day, if I don't have that home sold to someone else by that day, I buy it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's go back to if you bought it for $90,000 and now you can sell it for $115,000, that's a $25,000 profit, right?
Right.
So if we structure it the same way, and you have a $15,000 down payment and a $70,000 first, that's $85,000 that of OPM, right? Came from other people. 15 on the down payment from the buyer, 70 on the first position loan from the retiree. So basically what's left for me to put together is $5,000 for a $30,000 note at 8% interest. And I can tell you that is a crazy high yield because it's 52.5%.
Yeah, that would be great.
And then, but we're not done yet. How long do you think somebody's going to stay in that home?
Well, on average, it's 6, 7, 8 years, something like that.
What if you introduce that person to credit repair?
Mm-hmm.
And now they could trade in that 8% loan for a 4.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're going to pay you off sooner?
Yep. And that'll just drive your yield up.
Oh, through the ceiling. Because when they pay you back, in this scenario, if you got that note for $5,000, how much are they going to pay you back when they pay you off? It was a $30,000 note.
Yeah.
So basically, you're going to make 52% interest on a month-by-month basis, or it's annualized rate, but on the monthly payments, it's 52%. But when they pay you off early, say it goes 5 years, they're going to pay you back 6 times more than you lent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you divide that over a five-year period of time, that's 120% a year that you made in a kicker at the end because you got this 600%. That's not quite 600 because they are paying down interest slightly. Mm-hmm. And when I say slightly, I've done enough of these. That $30,000 second position note comes with a payment of $220.13. If you say it goes 5 years, that's 60 payments. 60 times 220 is $13,200. So first of all, just on its own merit right there, you have a $5,000 investment that in the first 5 years pays you $13,200. Is that a pretty good return?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then when they go to pay you off, on that note in 5 years, they've only paid down $1,479. And they still owe you $28,500 and change. So if they paid you off in 5 years, you would make $13,200 on the payments and $28,500 on the payoff. You would have $41,700 returned to you in 5 years off a $5,000 investment.
Hmm.
That's over 800% growth in 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let you contemplate that as we go to the next caller, but thanks for calling. We appreciate your question. It was it brought out a lot of great information from Bob. Thank you.
Thanks.
Frank, you are next. You with us?
Hello. I'm from Northern California. Appreciate all your time. Thank you very much. You know, in a lot of these things, things do happen. I mean, economies take a downturn. You mentioned that you've never did a repo on a note or anything like that. If that were to happen, you know, what's the process in these things? We hear, you know, a year, 2 years, I mean, all these things. So, I mean, there is an associated risk with some of this stuff. You know, what's the process? I realize it's different from state to state, but, you know, it might happen. That's the risk factor.
Sure, I mean, people die. They get hit by a bus. I mean, anything can happen.
I mean, it goes on and on and on for reasons.
But again, if you always look at it with a win-win-win philosophy and you made it a good deal for the buyer, where the buyer is actually putting money in their pocket every month. And I did have a lady die who we gave a loan to. It was the oldest person I've ever funded. She was 83, and she took out a 30-year loan. That's optimism right there. But she passed away, and the reason I know she passed away is because her son called me and wanted to know who to send the check to. Because he inherited the house with the mortgage, and he had actually lived with his mother. So, but if you, And this is what I love about this investment is every month, just without any appreciation or depreciation, the balance of that note is being paid down a little bit. And as you know, in the front end of a note, it's not a lot. Of a 30-year amortization, it's not a lot. But in a rising market, it's a no-brainer that you would be covered. In a falling market, this is why you need to have adequate skin in the game. And again, it goes back to how many people in the recession, the worst thing that happened here since the Great Depression 75 years earlier, how many people failed that put 15% down?
I couldn't even imagine. I've seen, you know, it goes on and on and on. But the point being is, you know, you've never done one, but how long would that process be? Just out of curiosity, what do you think?
It depends on a state-by-state basis. Typically, the western states are trustee sale states with a faster process, and the east coast states seem to be more judicial. I actually have taped to the side of my monitor a list of every state and whether or not they're judicial or non-judicial. In Arizona, it is a 90-day foreclosure state. Texas is the fastest in the nation, 30 days. You get to New York, New Jersey, Florida, you're looking at over 1,000 days. And I have friends all over the country from traveling to all those conferences, and I have REO friends in every state. I literally, you know 2,000 realtors around the country. A lady from Connecticut came to my seminar in October, and she said, Connecticut has the longest foreclosure. The average person stays in their home 5 years after they stop paying.
Wow.
So that would be something you want to know about before you invest in a note. And again, buying someone else's note in an area you don't understand, in a state that you don't know the laws, you cannot call a person yourself in North Carolina because you have to be a debt collector with a license to call a person who owes you money. So this is where you definitely would want to have your note serviced. And I have all my notes serviced. I'm not in the debt collection business, and I have notes in seven states, and I just like, you know, getting my checks in the mail. And I'll just tell you, I'm going to share with you at the conference of some things, simple little things I did with our business and with our lifestyle that significantly changed my ability to create notes and invest in notes.
Brian, thanks for calling. We do have to move on, but appreciate your calling tonight and participating in our podcast tonight. We have someone calling from the 240 area code. I'm not sure. Where are you calling from?
Maryland.
Oh, good. Thanks,
Maryland.
For
awesome.
Yeah. I want to ask a question regarding the qualification of the buyer when it's a commercial property. The rule for residential versus commercial. How does it work?
Well, if it's an owner-occupant loan, it's not really a difference of whether it's residential or commercial. It's a difference of whether or not it's owner-occupied or not. Dodd-Frank is the governing rule over owner financing only. So if someone is buying a home in a business or a rental property that they don't intend on owning, there are no qualifications for Dodd-Frank. It doesn't fit. It's an exempt property. But the biggest thing that you need to worry about is giving a loan to someone who cannot afford that property. And the rule that we use, and again, I hire someone to do this, just like I hire someone to service the paper. I hire someone to qualify the borrower because I'm not a licensed loan originator. I hire my title company who draws up the note and deed of trust because I'm not an attorney and I don't provide legal documents, right? So basically, this is something any successful person will tell you is find somebody good at what they do and hire that person. Don't try to be good at everything. You'll be so-so at everything. But the rule, the rule of thumb is basically 43% of their gross pay cannot more than any more than 43% cannot go toward the payment of debt. So that includes student loans, car payments, home payments, and credit card payments. It does not include things like groceries and utilities, because those are not, that's not debt, that's ongoing bills that you pay as you use.
Okay.
But that is the biggest qualification. And then also, the people that, I mean, money comes with trust. If you have someone that's going to step in and first of all, they're retired. I take that very seriously. These people no longer have the ability to make any more money. All they have is what they have. You want to do everything to keep that property safe. And I will tell you, I had a property where the title company screwed up, and they there was a loan on the property, and there was a delay in closing, and it took almost 2 months to finally close that deal. And they forgot that there had been a loan on it, and they recorded it without recording a loan. And it was a person that did a fix and flip. And I actually bought that loan. I bought that home just to protect that borrower.
Okay.
Because that person, you think, you know what, they will do their business with me the rest of their life because they know I have their back.
That's right. All right. Thank you for the answer.
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling. And
no
that
problem.
Is, thank you. And that's going to wrap us up for tonight. I will tell you that, Bob, again, give us your information as to how people contact you or what's your website address again.
Sure. Bob at notecarry.com, so NoteCarry.com, and just Bob, B-O-B, even if you're dyslexic, I'm still Bob. and then there's two sites, actually. It's notecarry.com is my software site, and there's not much that you can get into without being a member. And I'm actually in the process of changing that. I'm going to put up a few free tools that I think everybody could use to structure deals, everything from doing rental property analysis to fix and flip calculators and very easy to input, and you can PDF, you know, email a PDF file from your iPad from the hood of your car anywhere in, you know, you got signal. So then there's also my coaching site, which is notecarrynetwork.com. And that is, you know, there's some testimonials up you can see of some of the people that have attended my conferences and been in my training. But the biggest thing that I would recommend is just get on a couple of the webinars. Send an email to bob@notecarry.com. I'll add you to the list for the next couple of webinars, and then you can see just what we're doing. And we have a private deal board that we run on Podio. So anybody that has a note that they need to fund, or anybody has a note they want to sell or partner with somebody, we have our own little internal group of people. And you got to be very careful offering note deals to people on the internet, because that could be construed as a public offering. And when you're in a closed private group, that's why our Facebook group, you won't find it on Facebook, because it's a closed group and it's private. And the same thing with our Podio deal board. It's for members only. And this is where people that, you know, that belong to the group, and they've been vetted, and basically they're putting up things for each other. But on pretty much any webinar, we funded this week, on this week's webinar on Tuesday, we funded three deals live on the telephone call. And what people do is they send me the deal. I help my students structure their deals. So I don't do one-on-one coaching, but when you get a deal and you don't know how to do it, I'm usually able to jump in and help you structure that, with the provision that I get to share that. If you had questions about it, chances are a whole bunch of other people did too. And that's how I leverage my time, and everybody learns together. And if you just, you know, this is not an event. Learning notes is not an event. It's a process. And if you just commit to 1 year of watching a webinar every Tuesday, except, you know, 48 webinars a year, I guarantee you this stuff will come to you in your sleep after the first year. And it won't take you that long. But the best way to get started, if you've never invested, is find somebody that's doing notes and partner with them. And it reduces your exposure, and you're not learning a bunch of investor mistakes. You're going with someone else who's already in the business, and that's what I highly recommend, is partnering with other people in a trusted atmosphere.
Well, thank you, Bob. I think you're doing a great job, and I think it's you know, you're
it's obvious that you have a good heart in the way you approach the business. I wish everybody in the business was like you. But I'm glad
you're.
I wish you all the best. If you'd like to meet Bob, learn from him, and sit down with him for a personal consultation. He's agreed to do a little bit of that at the PaperSource Notes Symposium, which is coming up at the end of April in Las Vegas. And you can go to PaperSourceSeminars.com and get all that information. I will remind you that our discount ends April 5th, and we do have an expiration on our hotel discount. We have made arrangements with the hotel to have a really steep discount on the rooms, but that expires Sunday. This Sunday, March 26th. So if you've signed up, if you've already signed up, make sure that you sign up to get a hotel for that. Again, I want to thank you, Bob. It's been absolutely wonderful to be with you. And
well, thank you for having me on, Bill. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to seeing everyone at the seminar. And it is a very impressive seminar. It's a very well-run. John Schaub is one of my heroes. I got to meet him last year. And a little bit of that we do for Make-A-Wish, John Schaub does over $1 million a year for charity. I mean, that's what's so cool about this industry is that some of the biggest givers are in it, and that's who you want to hang out with. Life's too short to hang out with a bunch of takers, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Thanks again, Bob. Good night to everybody.
All right, thank you, Bill. Say hi to Allison. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.